Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to unpack a really significant case in California family law, one that's particularly relevant if you're navigating the complexities of domestic violence restraining orders, or DVROs, Reibolt v. Riley from 2018. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This isn't just about understanding a specific legal outcome. It's about grasping the nuances of how courts protect survivors, especially in co-parenting situations. And, well, it has some key lessons for those of you law students who will be dealing with these issues firsthand.
Exactly. Reibolt v. Riley is a great example of how the legal system grapples with the ongoing impact of domestic violence. It really pushes us to think beyond just physical acts and consider the broader context of fear and control.
Right.
Understanding the court's reasoning in this case provides, you know, valuable insight into the practical application of California's Domestic Violence Prevention Act, the DVPA.
Okay, let's dive in then. Reibolt v. Riley, what's the situation that led to this legal battle? Like, what were the initial circumstances?
So the story begins back in 2011. Courtney Reibolt obtained an initial DVRO against James Riley, her co-parent. The court at that time found that Riley had committed abuse against Reibolt.
Okay.
Several years later, in 2016, Reibolt sought to renew this protective order. Her argument for renewal centered on her continued fear of future abuse. She said this stemmed from Riley's persistent harassment during their child's parenting exchanges, and crucially, his repeated violations of the existing DVRO.
Ah, the violations.
Yeah, including ignoring a 25-yard stay-away order. So this wasn't just about, you know, past history, it was about ongoing behavior.
Right, she's presenting a picture of continued disregard for legal boundaries and, well, ongoing intimidation. So what did the trial court make of this when she requested the renewal?
The trial court sided with Reibolt. They granted the renewal of the DVRO for another 5 years.
5 years, okay.
But what's particularly interesting is that they didn't stop there. The court also modified the existing parenting plan. They placed restrictions on Riley's ability to attend their child's extracurricular activities during Reibolt's parenting time unless Reibolt provided written permission.
Mm-hmm.
This shows the trial court was really considering the broader impact of Riley's behavior on Reibolt's safety and well-being in the context of co-parenting.
Modifying the parenting plan like that alongside the DVRO renewal seems like a pretty significant step. And as we know, legal battles often continue. Riley didn't just accept this, did he?
No, he didn't. Riley appealed the trial court's decision. And this is where we get to the heart of the legal issues in the case, really.
Okay.
The central question before the Court of Appeal was whether the trial court was correct in finding that Reibolt's fear of future abuse was genuine and reasonable under the DVPA, especially given that there weren't necessarily new incidents of physical abuse in the period leading up to the renewal request.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because, as we often see, the legal definition of domestic violence and the grounds for protective orders can sometimes be, well, narrowly focused on physical harm. But this case seems to be looking at a broader picture. What did the Court of Appeal have to say about this concept of reasonable apprehension?
Well, the Court of Appeal upheld the trial court's decision, affirming the renewal of the DVRO. And you're spot on. The key takeaway here is their clear articulation of what reasonable apprehension means in the context of the DVPA. They explicitly stated that this fear isn't limited to just the fear of future physical violence. It absolutely encompasses the fear of psychological abuse, which includes things like harassment and manipulation. So for anyone seeking a renewal, this highlights the importance of documenting all forms of intimidating behavior, not just physical threats.
Yeah.
Even seemingly small instances of harassment can contribute to establishing that ongoing fear.
So Reibolt's testimony about Riley showing up at their child's soccer games, despite the existing stay-away order, that became a significant piece of evidence in establishing this reasonable fear of future abuse.
Absolutely. Reibolt testified that Riley used these parenting exchanges and extracurricular events as opportunities to intimidate and exert control over her.
Wow.
The appellate court recognized that this pattern of behavior, even if it didn't involve direct physical violence at those moments, could reasonably instill fear in someone who had already been a victim of domestic violence. It's about the cumulative effect, you know, actions that create a climate of fear and anxiety.
And what about the fact that Riley had actually violated the existing DVRO on multiple occasions? How did the Court of Appeal factor those violations into their reasoning?
Yeah, that was important. The court emphasized that while proving a violation of an existing DVRO isn't a strict legal requirement for a renewal,
okay,
Riley's repeated violations were indeed significant evidence supporting Reibolt's fear. They specifically pointed to the proximity violations during child exchanges and the trial court's assessment of Riley's overall credibility, finding his testimony less believable.
Credibility. Interesting.
So even if there hadn't been documented new instances of abuse after the initial DVRO was issued, the fact that he wasn't respecting the boundaries clearly laid out in the original order was a major factor for the court. It indicated a continued unwillingness to abide by legal protections.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the judge's assessment of who they believe is being truthful carries significant weight. That seems like a crucial, albeit less tangible factor.
Precisely. The appellate court specifically deferred to the trial court's findings on witness credibility. The trial judge had the direct opportunity to observe the demeanor and testimony of both Riebolt and Riley.
Makes sense.
Their conclusion that Riebolt was credible, and Riley less so, particularly given his admissions to some violations and even evidence of falsifying financial records, played a substantial role in the appellate court's decision not to overturn the renewal. This really underscores the importance of presenting clear and believable testimony in these types of hearings.
It sounds like the court is saying, we put this protection in place for a reason, and the restrained party's actions demonstrate that the need for that protection hasn't diminished. Now let's go back to the modification of the parenting plan, specifically the restriction on Riley attending extracurricular activities during Riebolt's parenting time. He argued that was an overreach, right? That it unduly interfered with his parental rights.
Yes, that was his argument. He essentially claimed that it placed an unfair burden on him and limited his ability to be involved in his child's life. However, the Court of Appeal upheld the trial court's decision on this point as well.
They did. What?
Their reasoning was directly tied to the findings of fact at the trial level. The trial court had determined that Riley had used these very events, the extracurricular activities, as opportunities to continue harassing and intimidating Riebolt.
Oh, okay.
Therefore, the restriction was deemed a necessary measure to prevent further abuse and protect Riebolt, even in these seemingly neutral settings.
So it wasn't about punishing Riley for past actions as much as it was about preventing future opportunities for harmful interactions within the context of co-parenting.
Exactly. The focus was on ensuring Riebolt's safety and well-being during her parenting time. And it's worth noting, while all the appellate justices agreed on renewing the DVRO, Justices Butts and Marrow, in their concurring opinions, raised a point about whether the parenting restrictions could have been drafted more narrowly.
Oh, interesting. So some disagreement there.
Not disagreement on the outcome, but nuance on the method. It illustrates the constant balancing act the judiciary undertakes in these sensitive cases, striving to provide effective protection while also considering the rights and interests of all parties involved, including the child, and aiming for the least restrictive means necessary.
Right, that balancing act. Huh. Okay, for our listeners, particularly those who are law students, what are the key factors that Riebolt v. Riley tells us a court will consider when someone is seeking to renew a DVRO? What's the practical checklist that emerges from this case?
Yeah, Riebolt v. Riley provides a pretty clear framework. Courts will look at several key elements. First, the factual basis of the original DVRO. Mm. What were the specific incidents of illness that led to the initial order?
Okay, the history.
Second, any violations of that original DVRO that have occurred since it was issued? Very important.
Right, the disregard factor.
Third, any significant changes in circumstances that might be relevant since the original order. And finally, the court will weigh the potential burdens that a renewed order would place on the restrained party. In Riley's case, as we discussed, his arguments about undue burden were not persuasive to the appellate court. They felt unsubstantiated.
So this case really emphasizes that the DVPA isn't just about reacting to individual acts of physical violence, but about recognizing and preventing ongoing patterns of abusive and controlling behavior.
Precisely. Riebolt v. Riley is a significant case because it firmly establishes that the protection offered by the DVPA extends beyond solely preventing physical harm to also encompass non-physical forms of abuse, like harassment and manipulation, when assessing the need for a DVRO renewal.
That's huge.
It is. The core message is that a survivor doesn't have to experience a new incident of physical violence to have a valid fear of future abuse that warrants a renewed protective order. A reasonable fear based on the history of abuse and any continued problematic behavior by the restrained party can be sufficient grounds for renewal.
So the past matters a lot.
Yes, as the court itself noted, the facts underlying the original order often provide enough proof of reasonable fear. This recognizes that the initial experience of abuse can create a lasting and reasonable apprehension in the survivor.
And it seems like the appellate court's deference to the trial court's credibility findings is a really important procedural aspect to understand here.
Absolutely. The appellate court's explicit acknowledgement of the trial court's role in assessing the credibility of witnesses is a crucial element of this case. Because, you know, domestic violence cases often hinge on personal testimony and conflicting accounts.
Yeah, it's often he said, she said.
Exactly. So the trial judge, who has the opportunity to directly observe the parties, is in the best position to determine who is being truthful. The Court of Appeal generally won't overturn those factual findings unless there's a clear error of law. This underscores the importance of thorough preparation and effective presentation of evidence and testimony at the trial court level.
Definitely. So, to summarize the key takeaways for our listeners, especially those of you studying law, what are the most important principles to understand from Reibolt v. O'Reilly?
Well, I'd say the two primary principles are these. First, the legal definition of reasonable fear under the DVPA is broad. It includes the fear of psychological abuse, not just the threat of physical violence.
Right, the non-physical stuff counts.
Yes. This means that a history of harassment, intimidation, and controlling behavior can be key factors in seeking a renewal. Second, trial courts are granted significant discretion in these cases, particularly when it comes to evaluating the credibility of the individuals involved and assessing the ongoing risk to the survivor. Appellate courts will generally respect those factual determinations.
Got it.
This case is a really important illustration of how courts balance the critical need to protect individuals from domestic violence with the due process rights of the person being restrained, particularly in the often complex context of post-separation co-parenting.
It's definitely a case that provides valuable insight into the practical application and interpretation of the DVPA. Thanks so much for walking us through it.
My pleasure. Happy to do it.
And for you, our listener, as you consider the implications of Reibolt v. O'Reilly, think about this. How might the legal principles we've discussed today, particularly the emphasis on non-physical forms of abuse and the consideration of past violations and credibility findings, apply in contemporary situations involving, say, technology-facilitated abuse? Or even in different legal jurisdictions that might have slightly different frameworks for addressing domestic violence. It's a constantly evolving area of law, and understanding cases like Reibolt v. O'Reilly provides a really crucial foundation for navigating its complexities.